Now time for our one-on-one Friday interview. Dungannon lady Michaela McCollum and Melissa Reid were arrested in Peru on suspicion of drug smuggling. They've been formally charged and face a maximum sentence of 15 years if convicted. Both women claim they were forced to carry the drugs by a criminal gang in Spain who threatened to harm them and their family. Now, over the weekend, I've been speaking to Sandra Gregory, who spent 7 years in prison, four of them in Thailand, after being found guilty of attempting to smuggle heroin out of the country. I started by asking her if she knew what the girls were going through.
I think I have a good idea of what they're going through. Yeah, our situations were slightly different, of course. I knew what I was doing. I did it for a ticket home. Whether the girls knew or not, I really don't know. But yes, I think emotionally I have a good idea of what they're experiencing at the moment.
What will that be?
Oh, upset, devastation, abandonment, isolation, shame, distress, shock, a vast assortment of different emotions, really, but none of them very positive. The whole thing will have been massively overwhelming for them. And in amongst that shock, of course, they're probably experiencing the psychological state of denial that this isn't really happening and this isn't going to continue much longer. And of course, Melissa's father showed up. So, oh, well, that's fine because Dad's here now and he'll fix it like he used to fix the roller skates and the Wendy house and everything else and it'll be OK.
How did you get caught up in this? Where were you? What happened?
Oh, I was just stupid, Stephen. I mean, I went to Thailand on a three-month holiday. And after 2 months, I realised, golly, I could get work in this country. So I left the island I was on. I went straight back to Bangkok and got work. And it was great. Got an apartment, got work, got a social life, settled down, loved it. Didn't give it a second thought for the fact that my ticket had run out and I was in Thailand without a return ticket home. So 2 years later, when I needed to come home, there'd been a terrible military coup. I think Amnesty International called it a bloody massacre, and it was a bloody massacre. I'd had amoebic dysentery, I'd had dengue fever. I needed to come home. Met a British man and I took him up on a particularly bad offer. He asked me if I'd smuggle 89 grams of heroin for him. He told me it was his personal supply. And would I take it? He said he'd give me £1,000 if I took his heroin to Tokyo for him. And as stupid as it sounds now, £1,000 was so much more than I needed. I thought, good, I can come back to Thailand, I can buy a ticket, get loads of presents.
See, I don't understand this because you don't sound stupid. So what I don't understand is how you don't immediately say to yourself, that is too risky. If I get caught, yeah, my life is destroyed.
And you know what, Stephen? I didn't think about it.
But
why?
Why?
I don't know. Because when you're in a bad situation and you just want out of that situation, I honestly didn't think about the consequences. The guy I was working for was tipped off to the customs by the British Embassy. So the British Embassy had told the Thai customs to wait for him. They were waiting for him at the check-in counter. They looked really pleased to see him when we arrived at check-in. Oh, you've arrived. Come, please come this way. We've been waiting for you. And they turned to me and said, oh, are you with him? I said, oh, yes, I am. Thinking that we were going to be escorted onto the plane. Because
where were the
late
drugs?
The drugs were in a very personal place. Very personal indeed. They weren't in my pocket.
Okay.
They took us off. And I said, yes, I'm with him. So they said, oh, please, you can come this way as well then, please. Went trotting off with these lovely chaps from the check-in counter. And I honestly thought, oh, you know, we're going to be escorted onto the plane. The next thing, we're in this little room and all hell broke loose. I mean, Robert had his boots taken off and his belt taken off and the contents of his bag all over the place. And I thought, golly, this isn't quite what I'd had in mind. I didn't think it was going to be like this. And I looked up to my left and I saw a big board of photographs on the wall, and it was all the different photographs were of men sitting behind a little table covered in packages, and over the top of that board of photographs was a sign that said customs seizures. And as soon as I saw that sign, I realized where we were and who we were with. And not long after I'd seen that sign, they found what they were looking for and we were arrested.
So they scanned, in order to find yours, they had to scan you because it was in a body cavity. They scanned you, did they?
It's an x-ray they use these days, yeah. Yeah, and it showed up as clear can be. There was absolutely no denying.
And at that moment, where they look at that x-ray and they look at you, what do they say to you? What do they do?
We were held at the airport there for about 6 hours. We were separated. We were brought back together again for a photograph in front of the table that I then recognised from the board of photographs, separated us again. Robert got a damn good kicking off the Thai customs, all from the neck down and all sort of Thai-style kicking with what is it, Thai boxing, I think they do out there. They left me alone with a very young Thai deputy. And actually, I would say they were quite kind, because when they brought out the handcuffs and put handcuffs on me, I got quite upset. So they took the handcuffs off and they shackled me by my left ankle to a like a metal couch sort of thing that I was sitting on. And I covered it over with a shirt that I pulled out of my bag, and I thought, gosh, really don't need to be looking at a chain. And they left me alone with this young Thai deputy, and he just seemed to think it was an absolute hoot that he's got this European bird chained up to the couch in his customs room. Ha! And he kept pacing in front of me and looking at me and laughing with these two fingers up to his head. And he kept saying, you know, ha ha, you heroine, you bad, you die. And I was like, no, surely not, surely not. I'm not, you know, and all the different reasons and excuses, which is kind of why I can almost relate to the girls in Peru. You blabble. Oh, it's not like that. I'm not a proper drug smuggler. I just want to go home. And if you explain enough, then you can explain it away and people will understand and maybe let you go home.
What was the first night like as you were walked into jail?
Oh, God. It was actually massively overwhelming, but I didn't realise at the time that the 3,000 women in the prison, the vast majority of them were already locked in, but it still looked like a chaotic environment. And then from there, I was sort of thrown into a room. It was the remand room with about 100 and something women, I think it was. And the mother of the room, she's a prisoner, she sort of parted two people and said, right, that's your space. There's sort of 12 to 15 inches of this gap in the floor. And that first night, I tried to go to sleep. And sometimes when you're in shock, you do fall asleep. I think the shock puts you to sleep. And I kept getting woken up. The person next to me kept banging me and pushing me and saying, you sleep two square. You sleep in your two square. And I realised we get two squares on the concrete. You got those lino tile things that stick on the concrete. I can't think what you call them, but like a little lino, you got two of those squares. That was your space. So if you laid on your back with your hands by your side, you were actually in two other people's space. So you could either lay on your side or you could lay on your back with your arms on top of you, and you couldn't stretch your legs out because you'd kick the person in the row opposite you. And I realised that first night, I need to learn to sleep in my own two squares, because if I don't sleep, I'm not going to be able to survive this experience at all.
And you were surrounded in that cell by how many women?
There were about 120 on the floor of that cell. I mean, I say cell, it was a room, two holes in the corner as a toilet, kind of little wall around it, and then bars on the window. So it wasn't really like a cell. It was like a room with bars on the window, really, but no room at all.
And was that to be your life for the next 4 years?
Yeah, I spent 3 years in that room because it was the remand room. And as soon as I was sentenced, I was put into a different building.
3 years on remand?
Yeah. The guy that that I was working for, he pled not guilty, so he dragged the trial out. And in Thailand, the assumption is if you have been arrested, you're obviously guilty. None of the innocent until proven guilty theory that we have in this country. It's the opposite way around. So there's no hurry to hear your case. You don't have rights to phone calls, access to lawyers and that translators and that sort of thing, because they are assuming from the very beginning that you are guilty. So there's no rush to hear the case. We went to court on an average of once a month for the next 3 years. And as a result of that, really, I experienced false hope. And people used to write to me and say, oh, well, as long as you've got hope, oh, you'll be okay, Sandra, but hang on to the hope. And I realised that that's actually a load of cotton ball, really, because you're better off dealing with reality.
What was the reality like in those prisons? What was, you know, after the shock of night one and night two, what's the community like? And is it like in the movies where you could be attacked at any time?
No, it's busier than in the movies. People are busy doing, especially in a place like Ladiao in Bangkok. You've got to look after yourself. You've got to wash your own clothes, wash your own body, get your own food, find your own washing line. So you almost have a life within the walls. It's a life that you have to learn to live very quickly, because there's a lot of women doing a lot of things in a short period of time.
Is it dog eat dog in there, though?
Oh, yeah, of course it is, yeah.
And is there a pecking order? Is there someone?
Yeah. There is.
Prisoners have been there a long time or bigger, whatever.
It's not so much the length of time, because everybody in Thailand is serving a long time. I have to remember I only had a baby sentence of 25 years because there was women on death row, of course. There was women, a lot of lifers, and there was women that had been in there for 20, 30 years. So me, with my 25-year prison sentence, paled into insignificance, really. But the pecking order was, a lot of it was to do with money and social status on the outside, because these people would also be influential on the inside. And it's not a case of people just come up and attack you for no reason. People attack for a reason.
So what were you threatened with?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't so much threatened, because people saw me as an opportunity. They thought that I'd be able to get them magazines, makeup, money, and they used to try it on in that sort of way. But the reasons people have fights and they get into trouble in prison is they get involved in things and they don't pay the bills. I mean, one woman, had her bottom lip bitten off. And it was a friend of hers, actually. And I remember this woman held onto the bars to stabilise herself, grabbed a hold of this woman's face and bit her bottom lip off. She spat it out and fed it to one of the cats and then ran around gloating that she'd done her a favour and given her a free facelift. That woman had owed the other woman money, and that was the punishment for not paying back your debts in prison. So generally, you don't get involved in things, and if you do, you pay your bills. I used to look at it. I mean, to be honest with you, I went through various stages, and for the first 3 months, I was absolutely convinced I wasn't staying. I was going to escape, or my dad was going to come with a helicopter and get me out, or they were going to throw it out of court, or the police were going to feel sorry for me. And after about 3 months, I realised that, actually, I have got to stay. And from there, I realised, well, you know what, Sandra, you got two choices. You can either do it, or you hang yourself. And I wasn't brave enough to hang myself, so I thought, well, you've got to do it. And once I decided I'm going to do this, I then had two choices. You can either moan and groan about it, or you make the best of a bad situation, take responsibility for the fact that you do deserve to be there. You created the situation yourself, so you need to just get on and deal with it. So I used to look at the situation. I used to talk to people. I learned an awful lot.
But you said that you got a 25-year sentence.
Yeah.
How come you got out early?
The King of Thailand granted me a pardon.
Why?
I applied for it. It's a standard procedure in the Thai jurisdiction. Most people don't get them. I didn't think I was going to get mine. I hoped for a reduction of sentence, maybe to 20 years or 15 years, and I thought, well, then it'll be okay. God bless that man. He granted me a full royal pardon.
Do you think you got what you deserved?
Well, absolutely I do. I should have checked out the consequences. I went to somebody else's country and I broke the law. Somebody comes to this country and breaks the law, I don't feel sorry for them when they end up in prison. I was naive, I was stupid, and yeah, I got what I deserved.
And the sense of freedom that you now have, that the rest of us take for granted, you must feel that differently, freedom.
I appreciate it. I do appreciate it, probably more than most other people, but I appreciate the smaller things in life as well. You know, people laugh at my old-fashioned phone and my old clothes and my very old car and, oh, can't you afford? I don't want a smartphone. I don't want new cars and all of that sort of stuff. I don't need really the trivial things that money can buy.
Sandra, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.